Hey, everybody, it's Hal Eisner. Thanks for joining us again for another edition of What the Hal. And, you know, sometimes through news stories, we get an interesting glimpse into the past and also an interesting glimpse into the future. Happened recently with the passing of President George Herbert Walker Bush. That reminded us what life was like under his administration. And now we have a new mayor in Southern California, the youngest female mayor ever in the state's history. She's only 25 years old. And so let's begin. Let's start this way. Let's go around the table. Let's have you introduce yourselves.
My name is Joanne Drake, and I serve as the Chief Administrative Officer for the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute out in Simi Valley, California. We also have an office in Washington, D.C. now.
Oh, you do?
We do.
Oh, that's interesting. I want to know more about that. But first...
And I am the mayor of Yorba Linda, Tara Campbell.
That really feels good to say, doesn't it?
It does. It really does.
Tara is really unique. She's 25. She started, she got elected the first time to city council at the age of 23. And I suspect she'll be president of the United States when she's 35.
I second that.
There you go. Well, I want to start with Joanne, actually, because I'd like to hear, you know, we've recently gone through a presidential death, a state funeral. The partner to the president of the library, the presidential library, Ronald Reagan. So it was Reagan Bush, and we lost George Herbert Walker Bush.
Sadly, we did.
And so you worked with both of those men?
I did. I was privileged to work at the Reagan Bush White House during the second term. I was in the presidential advance office, which meant I was able to travel with the president or before the president to the various events and trips around the world. And I was at Geneva for the first Reagan-Gorbachev summit and was present for all of the Reagan-Gorbachev summits, which was great, except for the last one, which a lot of people actually don't count and don't know about. President Reagan invited Mikhail Gorbachev to the U.S., to introduce him to the new president of the United States, who was George Herbert Walker Bush. And so they met on Governor's Island out in the middle of the New York Harbor and had a great sort of passing over event. And there's some great photos from that time. It was in January of 1989. And as I say, a lot of people sort of miss that when they count the summits, but it was an opportunity for these two men, Ronald Reagan, who had spent a lot of time with Mikhail Gorbachev, to really just introduce him to the new president. And I think they had a really great conversation and really sort of moved it forward and helped George Bush sort of move into the next era when the wall did fall and the Soviet Union started to come apart.
There's a piece of that wall at the Reagan Library. As well as many other things presidential, it's really a fascinating place to go to. And, you know, Ronald Reagan was an interesting man. I was at his state funeral at the Reagan Library, and I remember how incredibly sad it was. I mean, I remember Nancy Reagan and the children hugging the casket.
Right.
It was just tough thing to deal with, but it was so highbrow. It was so dead on as to what a state funeral should be like. And so was George Bush's.
Absolutely. George Bush had a beautiful ceremony and really, I think it matched him. Although I would say to you probably if you asked him about all the special little things, he would have said, no, forget it. You know, I'm not worth all that. But I think his family and his team really hit the mark. The funeral was beautiful. The speakers were really incredible, including his son, who I watched every moment, really praying for him that he wouldn't break down, and he made it almost all the way through. But certainly that must have been a very difficult moment for him to try and eulogize a dad that he, you know, had worshipped his entire life. And
there were always a lot of stories about the father-son relationship there and what that was like. And of course, the Oliver Stone movie was sort of portrayed. It sort of had a very tense relationship there between father and son. But boy, I tell you, watching President George W. Bush eulogize his dad and then those last words in which he just really was so, I guess the word is human. He was grief-stricken.
Absolutely.
And you know, I think it would have been... In many ways, I think it would have been, who is that guy if he's not crying?
Right.
You know, you lose your mom, you lose your dad, you lose your tears. They come right out of your face.
Yeah. You know, I think that the Bushes tease one another that they're kind of emotional people anyway, but, you know, they have so much to be proud of and so much to stand on, but the bottom line is they are people. And George Bush was a human being, and, you know, he had his foibles, and losing the 1992 election, that hurt. He told people that. It hurt physically and emotionally. But, you know, he came up out of that, and he really, I think, said to himself, okay, well, I'm done with that. Now what am I going to do? And I think he went right to the person that he is. He's giving. He wants to help people. And he joined up with Bill Clinton, of all people. I mean, who would have imagined?
What a great combination that was.
Yeah.
And that spoke to the notion that you can have different agendas, you can still have a common goal.
Absolutely. There's no question. And I think, you know, one of the things that I hope people will take from this week of funeral services and all of the attention that's being paid to George Bush is, you know, I want the moms and the dads and the teachers and everybody to gather the kids and talk to them a little bit about who George Bush was and who Ronald Reagan was and why they were important, what they did for this country and the world, and the fact that they are willing to work with their rivals to really better the country. And I mean, I know Tara is feeling it now, you know, really as somebody who's been put in charge of a lot of constituents. You know, I know you're looking for people to work together on a community level.
Yep.
And I think for me, I'm
Look, this
excited.
Is fine if she wants to take over the interview. What the hell?
I mean, she's doing a good job.
Well, it's hard for me, go ahead,
because I like the question you're going after here.
I'm just so proud to be sitting next to her, honestly, Hal.
Oh,
thank you for that. It's extraordinary to think that a young woman who's only 25 is the mayor of a really important city in the state of California. And I think it speaks volumes, not just what happened in this election, but what can happen in future elections.
You know, I got to tell you, I'm just amazed as I look at her. First of all, I've known her for a while, and I'm very proud of her. I almost feel like, you know, I have a vested interest here. But I'm very proud of her. I think she's done very well. And, you know, young people are the future. And I think it's important for young people to step up and step into these situations and start to have an influence on what will be their lives, their communities, their constituencies, right?
Oh, my gosh. You guys are too kind, too kind. I should bring you around. No, it is a complete honor to be sitting here with you and to hear about the history of Reagan and Bush and really the legacy that they have left. And I'm so glad that this kind of happened during this week of being able to reflect on George Bush's legacy and getting to talk to people about, really, people don't remember, he had a long legacy in Congress, CIA, vice president, that he really left an imprint on this country. Mm-hmm. And now, taking it down to the local level of government, we're seeing more people get involved, more people be invested in it. And I'm hoping to bring that to my city, that not only younger generation is getting involved, but that we're all getting civically involved in all levels of government, because this is really our government, and we should be a part of the solutions.
Well, I think that's a very healthy attitude. I think that's a good attitude, because I've always thought that everybody should be involved in public policy. Everybody should be involved in their community. Everybody should sort of do their little part in some way or another. I've always looked at what my job is sort of being like a student council representative, that I go to the meeting that all the other students can't go to because they're in math class, and then I come back and I tell them later what happened at the meeting. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I do. I mean, I go out and I go to the city council meeting, or I go to the drive-by shooting, or I go to the pursuit, or the fire, or the whatever, and then I come back and tell everybody what happened. So, I mean, that's sort of my way of being a big part of the community. It's a job, it's a profession, but I'm also part of the community. And I think politicians very much are part of the community, and I think sometimes we all, and I'm not going to get up here on a soapbox and tell all of you what I think, but I do think that everybody should have a vested interest in their own community. And in whatever little or big way you do that, it's where you live. It's what you call home.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I, you know, listening to you talk, that isn't just everything that you do. I mean, if you've known Tara for a long time, seems to me that you are serving as a mentor. And I think that is so essential in today's society, not just for kids, but for women who are wanting, and men, of course. But, I mean, we're talking about a woman who is a mayor now. I'm sure she has mentors. You may be one of them. And I hope she will serve as a mentor. We've got to encourage and, you know, stand as examples in with the kids in elementary school. We need to go into that young and explain to them, what does that mean? Because they will respond.
Absolutely. I cannot agree with you more. I have had not only women mentors, but some of my greatest mentors were men. And the reason I'm here today is because of their guidance, and I hope to pay it forward. One of the things that I'm going to be doing as mayor is actually starting this really an academy for high school youth to come to City Hall, and we're going to go every month through different departments and give them a nonpartisan positive experience in local government, because we see it getting really divided right now and just this negative connotation with government, and being able to provide young people with a positive outlook and a way for them to get involved is so incredibly important.
And you've dovetailed right into the next thing I want to talk about. Yeah, because I think we're all very concerned about the divisiveness. And I think that this country is probably, at least in my lifetime, more divided than I've ever seen it. People say that, but, you know, it starts to become somewhat diluted after a while. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear that all the time. I mean, it's really true. And so what can you do, Mayor Campbell? I feel like this is a debate. What can you do to help undivide a divided community?
One is showing them how they can make a difference now. I think for a long time, people, we see government as this entity that's not connected to us. And if we can show them that they can give back and be a part of the solution, a good example I could give is we opened a dog park in Yorba Linda. And we had a girl come up. We were taking names for that dog park. And she came up and said, well, you should name it Checkers Dog Park. And Yorba Linda is home to the Richard Nixon Library. And if you know, Nixon's dog was Checkers. And he made a big famous speech about Checkers. And she comes up to our council dais and explains to us why it should be Checkers Dog Park. And that girl was 8 years old.
Oh. Wow.
And we ended up naming it Checkers Dog Park. So it doesn't matter your age. It doesn't matter your gender, race, whatever. You can make a difference, and you can be a part of your government and your city.
And I think what I want to say to that is that 8-year-old girl, by having that one little experience, that's going to change her life. Mm-hmm. She's probably going to become somebody who may stand at a podium later in life. Because she had an
she's
experience.
She's learning to lead, yes.
She's learning to lead and to have an influence at 8 years old. And so did you ever have an experience when you were a kid growing up that sort of moved you in the right direction?
I had so many great mentors, and this is what comes to my mind, and my dad will hopefully laugh. When I was kind of growing, I didn't grow up in a political family. We weren't into politics. In fact, I grew up with my dad kind of yelling at the TV, like I think a lot of people did, at the politicians. And I just saw that it was, wow, this is what we think of our elected officials. And I just felt like it was really sad. And I thought, okay, this needs to change. These are the people who are representing us and making decisions on things that affect our daily life. And so that's really what sparked in my interest to hopefully be a change, be better representative of people, and make people proud that this is how our government's going.
One of the things I've asked you before, I'm going to ask you again. When you were going door to door, and you did door knocking, right?
I did.
When you went door to door, how many people do you think said, come back in 20 years, you're a little too young for this?
You know, once I had a couple minutes to talk to people, they realized I knew that city budget inside and out. They realized I had ideas. I had plans. I had experience. I was the chair of the Parks and Rec Commission before I ran for council. And actually, I'll never forget going to this one gentleman's door, and he and I didn't agree on a park issue. And I was like, oh no, he's not going to support me. I remember this guy, he's not going to support me. And he was an older gentleman in his 80s. And he's like, no, I'm voting for you. I was like, oh my gosh, thank you so much. What convinced you? He's like, we didn't agree on the issue, but the way you handled the meeting and the way you handled the issue. And that just spoke volumes to me, that we can agree to disagree, but if we're cordial and we move things mm-hmm. forward, we can get a lot done.
You were on the Park and Rec Commission. You were chair of that?
I was.
How old were you then?
I was 21.
21. What were you doing at 20? Did you go out on a date to dinner or anything? I mean, did you go out for a drink?
I still have friends, yeah.
Do you have a life? I joke, I jest. But I mean, so you really started at 20.
Mm-hmm.
Or was it 21?
Park 21, and
Rec. 21. You really started at 21. Mm-hmm. And there was no public service prior to 21?
No.
So you've now been in public service for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so what do you see 4 years from now?
Well, my plans for mayor will really guide that. I'm just really humbled to be serving my hometown.
So what she's learned already is how to pivot.
Hal, I'm being honest with you. I have no plans right now except to be mayor of my hometown.
Right there, you know, we're looking for presidential candidates for 2020, so I don't know if
she's still too young for 2020.
That's right. Yeah.
There is an age requirement.
Yes,
you know.
We have to give 10 years before we can start knocking on doors for Tara.
You
got to
be
president.
35.
Yeah, you got to
be 35. You want to be president someday?
I have no idea what the future has in store, but I hope that every little girl growing up understands and knows that they can be president. I hope that they grow
Me
up
too.
And you shared your story that you told your little girl.
Yeah, I told her I thought she was going to be president.
Yeah.
Now she's gotten her degree in sociology and working on her master's in public policy, education. I guess it's management
right.
and policy is what
she
it's called.
She can still be president.
Yeah.
Well, she could also be Secretary of Education. See, I think that the future is in the hands of people other than us. We're setting it up for now, but other people have got to come up and grow up just like we came up and grew up and grew into the community. And kids now will grow up and be in the community. And so this is kind of the point where we look and see who the future leaders are. And I think it's fascinating to see people rise to the occasion, percolate to the top, become mayors and like all the new people we saw get into Congress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a couple of millennials there as well.
Well, I think once they realize, and Tara certainly is the main example here, that politics really does affect their everyday life. And you can explain it probably best at the local level. You know, she's talking about potholes and, you know, services, health and, I mean, water and sewer and the paper and the electrical and your dogs, a dog park and the parks and recreation, things that happen to you every single day. You drive your car into your garage. I mean, how many times did politicians affect that? Probably a lot more than you think. And I think she's right on. If she's starting to understand that at this level, I hope she'll help other young men and women in their communities understand that they too can be involved and help make a difference. You know, everybody thinks that politics is very complicated. Certainly it is as you go up into the federal level. But I think, honestly, sometimes they make it complicated so that others don't get involved,
yeah.
You know, so that they can convince you that, oh, no, it's too hard for you to understand. Well, it's not. It really isn't. It's about jobs, and it's about the economy. It's about gas taxes, and it's about the security of this country. And we all know what that is.
Yep.
Well, and she's had a lot of experience with dealing with social issues because as a press aide to Supervisor Andrew Doe in Orange County, she was exposed to a lot of that, and that's where we first met. And we were doing homeless stories and going out to the homeless encampments. And so Tara and I have sort of, you know, had those experiences. And so that's a lot of what local leaders do is they deal with issues that have to do with, you know, homelessness all the way around to anything that's local, really. I mean, we talk about all news being local, and that could be anything happening around the world.
Right.
Because anything happening around the world has local implication. I think that may also apply to politics, because things that happen in Washington certainly affect us here.
Absolutely.
Things that happen in other countries certainly affect us here. So, I mean, I think it's very important to recognize the sort of the domino effect of things, the ripple from one place to another. What is it that excites you about politics? What is it that, I mean, is it really the sort of chance to help people, or is it something else?
it is the chance to help people, especially on the local level. You know, once you do get up to federal or even state in California, you have, you know, 80 assembly members, 40 senators. But when you're on the local level, either your city council, which is 5 council members, or the board of supervisors, 5 board members, trying to get 5 people to agree on something is a lot easier than 80 or, you know, over 400. And so you're able to see the ideas that you have. You can implement them and see them come to fruition. And if you have a council that can work with each other, not always agree, but be able to work together, you're able to move those things forward and just really see things come to fruition.
Joanne, I want to ask you, in light of some of the things I've asked Tara, when did you start in politics?
Well, I went to school at GW in Washington, D.C., and I really thought I was going to become a State Department Foreign Service Officer.
Oh, really?
That was my love. And in my sophomore year, I was asked whether I wanted to have a sort of an internship part-time job on the Hill, on the House side, in a very domestic issue, interior affairs, you know, mm-hmm. that dealt with public lands and national parks. And I was intrigued by that. It happened that my local member from California was the ranking member at that time. And there was
who was it?
It was Don Clausen.
Okay.
And he's gone, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But he was a great, great man and a good member of Congress from the Northern District of California. He was a pilot, and he eventually went to the Transportation Committee. But it really opened my eyes as to so many issues that affect me domestically. I sort of lost my flavor for becoming a Foreign Service Officer. It didn't cut down my need to travel, however, around the country. So when I ended up at the White House, I was in the right place at the right time, and I ended up in an office that did allow me to travel. But really, you know, to focus on the domestic side of things, frankly, which was Ronald Reagan, a man that I saw to be a great leader and a good leader and a good president for this country.
Yeah, I think a lot of people may not know that you really have had some incredible experiences. I mean, you were chief of staff for Nancy Reagan.
Right.
After they came back from D.C., you then became chief of staff for
President Reagan. Not immediately.
But outside of the
right,
White House.
Right, when we came back, yeah.
And then Bush.
And, well, I served under President Bush when he was vice president.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't on his actual staff, but like a lot of people that worked at the Reagan-Bush White House, if you worked for Ronald Reagan, you worked for George Bush. You
right.
know? I mean,
right.
he had very specific members, but I used to run into him a lot on the property. And one fun little story, and, you know, I was a very small fish in a very big pond back there. I don't want to pretend otherwise. And so was thrilled every time that I got to see the president or the vice president on the property. They used to have lunch every Thursday when they were both in town in the Oval Office, just the two of them. And it was sort of their guilty little pleasure that was Mexican lunch, something that they didn't get very often otherwise. And there were no staff involved. I think there's only been a couple of pictures actually taken of the occasion. It was a very private moment for them, and it was an opportunity for them just to share things about themselves and about what was going on in the world and the country. You know, and a time to shut the door and shut everybody else out.
Do you think they were good friends?
I think they
became, or just colleagues?
No, I think they became good friends. And I say that because they're very similar people in that they both loved people and they both were interested in people and they were both very giving kinds of people. And I think Ronald Reagan and George Bush became friends a lot faster than a lot of people thought they would because they were, you know, from different places. And they, you know, there'd been some animosity on the campaign trail.
Well, I remember some of that. And I remember, it seems to me, if I can clear out some of the dust in my brain, that there was a point there that President Reagan was thinking about taking on Gerald Ford for his vice presidential, and he had just been president.
Right.
And there was a lot of confusion over, well, how would that work? Would
right.
you have co-presidents? Or,
I think
you
that
know?
Didn't last very long when it came right down to it. I think Paul Laxalt was a name that was thrown around quite a bit. Bob Dole certainly was a name that was thrown around quite a bit. George Bush, I think, at the time was last on the list. I don't think there was anybody at that point that thought Ronald Reagan would ask George Bush. You know, they had been campaign enemies, really. It had gotten quite ugly on a few times. But I think, you know, cooler heads prevailed and they, you know, took a deep breath and they stepped back and they thought to themselves, look, you know, this is a man from California. He's been governor. He's got a lot going for him. But politics being what they are, you know, he's going to need a partner that comes from a different part of the country that appeals to a different group of people and has different experiences. And George Bush at that point, you know, he'd been shot down and almost killed. He had been the director of the CIA, so he had a lot of international experience. He'd been the envoy to China. He'd been a member of Congress twice. I mean, you couldn't write a resume better than that, honestly. And I think it was, you know, Ronald Reagan who thought to himself, look, I'm gonna sit and meet with him. Let's talk. And I don't think it took him very long to realize, yeah, he could work with them. This would be a great partner. And they were.
And that's not the only example of two people that were at opposing ends that ended up becoming partners. The same thing happened with John Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson.
Right.
Because those two were, nobody would have thought those two would have gotten along. But I think it was Bobby Kennedy who convinced John Kennedy that he needed somebody from the South to give him the geological balance that he needed.
Right.
If I'm correct on that, I think I am. And that's how that all came together.
Right. Yeah.
That's your recollection as well.
I think that is exactly right. You know, politics being what it is, you know, you need the numbers, you need the votes, and you need to appeal to, you know, a good cross-section of your party. And if not your party, then the whole country when it comes right down to it. So it was a good match. And I think there are a lot of things that happened in those 8 years with Reagan and Bush that probably wouldn't have happened had it been two different people.
A couple of personal asides, and then I want to ask you guys a couple of other quick questions. One is I've told this story that I joined the Young Republicans at college, not because I was a Republican, because I'm really, truly an independent, but all the pretty girls were in Young Republicans. And in college, I was interested in the pretty girls. And so I thought, what the hell, you know? And so I joined that, and I got to meet a lot of pretty girls and a lot of nice guys. And I remember back then we were handing out brochures for George Bush, and he was running for Congress. And people back then, as I pointed out to you earlier, were saying this guy could be president someday. Mm-hmm. And there were times over the years that I interviewed him. I remember once interviewing him coming off of a tennis court. I covered him as president. I think after he became president, I never really had a one-on-one with him again. It was more like when he was a Texas local. Mm-hmm. But even when he was envoy to China, I'd call over there. Barbara would answer, and we'd do a radio interview. And so, you know, I had that connect to the past, and I remember George Bush, and I remember what a nice guy he was. Always nice to me. I don't mean that to sound like we were friends or we knew each other well or we talked a lot. We really didn't. But on the moments or instances where we did, he was very cordial to me. Mm-hmm. And
well, I'm in the same position. I don't pretend, you know.
Well, you were closer to him than I was.
That we were
friends,
or that he knew me well, and I saw him every day. But, you know, he was a part of my life every day, honestly. I wasn't a part of his, but
you guys intersected.
Exactly. We did intersect and had some special times, and I got to be privileged to a number of events that Ronald Reagan and George Bush were part of. And that, you know, for me, that's an extraordinary memory that, but it reminds me that it's important to share those with people and share them with the kids and share them with young people so that they understand that being president, A, is possible. Anyone can become president of the United States. And B, that they're people. You know, they aren't just president. They're human beings.
Well, almost anyone could. I couldn't because I have too many skeletons in my closet and they won't even vote for me. Pause. Laughter. I want to kind of round out on one other note. In Yorba Linda, your community, you have the Nixon Library.
Yes.
And you live next door to it, right?
I live right next door.
Yeah, tell me about the Nixon Library, and then we're going to wrap it up with you talking about the Reagan Library.
It's incredibly beautiful, and it just got renovated, the Nixon Library. And very, very, from what I hear, very different from the Reagan Library, mm-hmm. but we are just really blessed in Yorba Linda to be one of 13 cities to have a presidential library, and for California to have two. I think we both take great pride in having Nixon and Reagan from California, and just a beautiful, please go down there. It's just a beautiful.
What kinds of things will people see in there? I've been there. I know some of
the answers. They renovated it, you know, they opened the museum right with Watergate, you know, some of the things. But people might not remember all the great things that Nixon did with China. You know, he brought the EPA, a variety of things that he was able to do in his presidency and had an equally long tenure in public service. So it'll really go through his history, the history of the 60s, 70s, Vietnam War.
Am I confusing history? Was he with Brezhnev as well? I have this recollection of his influence with Russia. It was China that he was big on. Who was the Russian leader at the time? Do you remember?
I think it was Brezhnev.
I think it was Brezhnev. And I think that, you know, that was another world leader that he dealt with at the time. He was very good with the international politics. Mm-hmm.
He was actually the reason I got started.
Was he?
Intrigued in politics. When I was maybe 7 or 8, I wrote a note to President Nixon at the White House. And I couldn't tell you what it said other than, you know, I've been watching you on TV or something. Anyway, of course, I got a letter back. At the time, I thought he wrote it. And I valued it forever and ever and ever. And, of course, now I can't find it. But I will never forget the feeling of getting an envelope that says the White House, Washington, D.C. Yeah. on the corner with my name on the front of it. Really just so exciting. You know, it's as good as getting one from Santa Claus. But for me, and I watched him and really intrigued by him. And, you know, it's unfortunate that the story ended the way that it did, because he really was, he brought a lot to this country, and I think people forget that.
Well, and he was also vice president under Eisenhower, so he had given a lot of public service over the years. I remember the last time I saw him, like, up close and personal was well after he was out of the White House. And somewhere in Orange County, he was going to see a friend. He had a little impromptu news conference out on the driveway of this house, and I remember standing there and thinking, wow, that's Richard Nixon right mm-hmm. there, you know. And impressive, although he had an infamous situation, a couple of them over the years that made things difficult. But that was Nixon, and that was a time that is long gone. Mm-hmm. But I do remember him as vice president under Eisenhower, because you're 25, but I've been 25 several times, and I do have that recollection of what he was like as vice president of the mm-hmm. United States. So mm-hmm. that goes back quite a way, and so for you, the Reagan Library, of which you're the CAO, what can people see who haven't been there? What does it cost to get in? All those sort
of
things.
Well, it's an extraordinary place. Our ticket right now is $29 for an adult, and that is because we have a very special exhibit on Pompeii. This exhibit is straight from Pompeii, from Europe. It includes a lot of body casts, a lot of beautiful things that were uncovered when they went to excavate the location. There's also a room, and that part of the experience is that you get to experience the volcano when it goes off, when Vesuvius goes off, and then
oh, really?
What happens afterwards, not just the shaking, but the feeling of it, and then to see the body casts that were uncovered immediately after that. So it's pretty extraordinary, I have to say. We also, for the first time this year, have an evening exhibit called Holiday Lights. It's been very popular with people who coming up there. Similar if you've been to the zoo, maybe, or Descanso Gardens, similar to that. You can get a hot chocolate, get a churro, get a glass of wine. We have snow at the Reagan Library now every night. It's
great. Woohoo!
Yes. Beautiful lights. And there's a walking path that takes you by. You can see Santa the Radar. The F-14 that we have up there is serving as sort of the front drop of tracking Santa. Great music combined with the lights, similar to what they do in different places. So that's fun. But every day that you come right now, you will see Air Force One. We are very proud to be the only presidential library with Air Force One. This aircraft served 7 presidents, including President Nixon, and Ronald Reagan rode on it the most miles, over 650,000 miles. It's the Boeing 707, and we display it inside the building in a way that Ronald Reagan wanted to do that. He knew it was going to be retired, and he was the impetus of us getting that aircraft. And you can walk in the front door just like you would if you're going to go on board Air Force One, and walk all the way through it and see where the president's cabin is, see where the first lady's cabin is, where media sat in the back, where the security sat, where guests sat. And we also have a Marine One helicopter. I know the Nixon Library has one as well. Ours is from the Johnson era, and we are hoping at some point to get a Marine One helicopter from the Reagan era. And at that point, we have promised the Johnson Library that we will pass our helicopter back to them, back to Texas, so that they can have it too. And we have, you know, what I think is really important about the Presidential Library is it's not just about the man whose name is on the front. Someday it'll be a woman. But it's about the country and the world during those times. And I think both the Nixon and the Reagan libraries do an extraordinary job of really helping you to understand what the world was like, who was in charge, how it felt to be an American during that time, what was going on in pop culture and, you know, songs and how did people dress and what was, you know, we have a whole section on rebuilding America that Ronald Reagan, when he came into office, really had to sit down and figure that out, how to rebuild this country from the ground up economically. We have a gaming table where you can come and play the stock market using the actual stock market amount during the 1980s based on what,
interesting.
Yeah, what a lot of people, Microsoft and gasoline and that oil and all that sort of thing. And it's really amazing the people that come through there that just didn't know that was what was going on. And so, you know, we want them to get to know Ronald Reagan, the man, and Ronald Reagan, the president, and the country and the world, because he certainly affected both.
I've been to a number of these presidential libraries, the Kennedy in Boston, the LBJ in Austin, Texas, mm-hmm. and of course the two here. They are wonderful places to go to, and I'm sure, even though I've not been to all of them, I'm sure they're all equally fascinating to go to, because all the papers are there from the presidential era and all of the things that were representative of that time. I think I remember at the Nixon Library there were dresses from Pat Nixon and things like that, and so all that's interesting. And just to keep me honest, when in doubt, Google, right? So the Moscow summit of 1972 was a summit meeting between President Richard Nixon and General Secretary Leonid Brezhnev of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union. It was held May 22nd through the 30th, 1972.
Good memory.
It's not memory, that's Google.
Google, very good.
But before was memory.
Right.
And surprisingly, yes, I guess I was right on that one. But
Well, I don't want to forget, by the way, I left out the new hologram. Because it's so new, it's not on
my list. They have this thing. They have this thing at the Reagan. Go ahead and tell them about it. It's a hologram of President Reagan that's really extraordinary.
Right. It's a sort of first of its kind. It's never been done for a president. We have three scenarios where you can come and see Ronald Reagan in all dimensions and hear him talk about his time at the ranch and his time in the Oval Office and a little bit about his train trip in 1984 during the campaign on the Ferdinand Magellan, the train that was built for FDR when he wanted to go around the country. So it's a new exhibit. It's really extraordinary.
Let me just ask you this. What do you think women bring to the political scene now? We've had so many new women join the forces of political positions.
Well, yeah, you're seeing a record number of women in Congress, and actually, in terms of local government, women make up about 20% of mayors. So I'm glad to see more women coming to the forefront, because we care about all these issues. We care about police officers, firefighters, public schools, libraries, parks. We care about all those issues, and we're 50% of the population. We need to be at the table and in those discussions.
Joanne?
Absolutely. I think women bring common sense to the table. I think sometimes when there aren't enough women in the room, it trails off into the conversation, and women seem to be able to bring it back to what's important.
You mean when we start talking about sports?
That.
Yeah, that.
consensus builders.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, it's going to be fascinating to see how this goes in the next term of Congress with all the new influx of female mm-hmm. congressional folks. It's very exciting to see what's going to happen. There's always nice to see some change. And I think, you know, I just want to sort of end on this note that we are extremely lucky in Southern California to have two really, really, really good presidential libraries. And if you have not, and if you live in Southern California, or you're from somewhere else and you come to visit Southern California, you really should plan on seeing the Nixon and the Reagan libraries. They are really worth your time. And I say that having been to both. And so that's it sounds like an endorsement, but it really is just me saying, you really ought to go. What the hell? Okay. All right. Any final words?
No. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Hal.
Glad to have both of you here. Thank you very much. Good luck, Mayor.
Thanks, Hal.
Absolutely. Good luck.
A big thanks to Mayor Campbell and Joanne Drake. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to our podcast at iTunes, Google Play, wherever you happen to get your podcast. And give us 5 stars. If you really like us, give us 6, 7, or 8. It'd be okay. Anyway, thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.